to our regular Town of Discovery Bay board meeting. If we could all rise and join Director Grant in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Okay.
Sorry, turn the mics on. Has roll call been taken?
Roll call been taken, let the record show, all members are present.
Okay, thank you. This is the time in our meeting where we have public comment. It is open for you to come and comment on anything that is not currently on the agenda. Please know we are here, we're listening. We're not able to respond, but we are definitely listening to what you have to say. So is there anybody in the audience that has some public comment? Okay, yeah, please welcome.
Hello.
If you could join us up here at the mic so we can, because this is done through Zoom, so that allows everything to be heard.
Hello, my name is Linda Lambert, and I have previously written back in December to all the board members regarding serious public safety issues in our community. Specifically, and we've reached out to the sheriff, and so I'm reaching out to you and also Diane Burgess' office because I'm not getting any response from the sheriff's office. It's regarding young children and tweens riding dirt bikes, many dirt bikes, motorized dirt bikes, not bicycles, throughout our community, and they're speeding up and down our streets. They're causing havoc and a public safety to us. They're weaving in and out of traffic. They're all over the road. They're on the sidewalks. And it's become a real nuisance in the last year, but in the last few months, it's escalated. I've reached out to the sheriff. It seems to go in a black hole. So that's why I'm coming to you to help facilitate this. The problem has not only been a public safety hazard and a road hazard, it's also escalated to the point that I have been up to the Cornell Park with my dog, and they were riding their dirt bikes in and around the baseball diamond and on the sidewalks recklessly, and I was at the picnic table minding my own business, and next thing I know, I'm surrounded by three or four kids on these mini bikes. And they come up to me and they're intimidating and harassing me, going, "Lady, what are you doing? Are you filming me?" They were menacing. I was afraid. I was actually afraid of these kids. And I didn't want to escalate the situation. I just stayed quiet. And they finally went away, and another lady that comes to the park came up, and she's like, that comes there regularly, she's like, "You're upset. What's wrong?" I told her. She called the sheriff's department. I guess that went in a black hole too, because I never had any follow-up with that. But I was actually harassed, intimidated. I was scared. I felt like, why am I so scared of these kids? I had my phone out and they were like, "Are you filming me?" So I wasn't sure if they were gonna try to take my phone. Were they gonna harm my dog? That's why I stayed quiet. So since that time, I wouldn't go to the park anymore until I had my husband go get me pepper spray that I put on a lanyard around my neck to go to the park. I shouldn't have to feel like that in my community. This has been going on up and down my street. I can't go to the park without being afraid. I should not. I have been a resident here since 1994. I have never felt like this. I have never felt that I had to be afraid or wear pepper spray in my community. And I can't seem to get any action from the sheriff's department. I know you all have limited abilities. I'm enlisting you to help coordinate with the sheriff's department. office, which we have written, I have already written to the sheriff's department, to the lieutenant, to ask for patrol. I don't understand why our sheriff's department is not citing these children and doing something about it. Our community is changing, I get that, but it's not changing in a good way. So I'm just asking you for your help and to find solutions. I realize these kids.
If we can get you to, sorry, wrap up a little bit, we're kind of past the 3 minutes, but we're listening.
Okay.
So if you could wrap up your comments, please.
I understand kids need to be kids and have fun. We need to find solutions where these kids can ride their motorbikes safely. And I have some suggestions for that. But this behavior is unacceptable. And I shouldn't be afraid to live and walk in my neighborhood or parks.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn.
Is there anyone else with public comment? And just as a reminder, we have 3 minutes on
yeah,
it. Okay.
I'll be sure. I'm not going to.
Thank you.
Linda's husband, and I just want to also attest to the fact that I think it's a little bit over the top when you basically have kids that are so unruly that they're actually hoodlums. Okay. You don't have to be a gang member from Stockton to be a hoodlum. But what happened to Linda was effectively a verbal assault. Okay. That could have turned into a physical assault, because she didn't know where that was going to go. I've never seen her that afraid. And nobody should be that afraid in our community. And Kevin knows we've been here for a very long time. And I don't want to see this community degenerate. But what's also, I'm not on Nextdoor, I'm not on that app, but I did, my wife kept telling me about the things. And that's why we said, wait a minute, this is a bigger picture here. This is public safety issues that we need these sheriffs to be doing their job. Period. Okay, but when Pam Fitzgerald has to close her shop because of these kids, and when you have a board member up here, apparently that had a lot of thievery done last October, and Tasteless Kitchen, that closed, that's hurting our community, folks. This is our community. Why are we allowing hoodlums, I don't care how old they are, to take over our community? And so we don't really know the best way, but we're starting with the local government. I guess you're not, quote, government, you have a limited thing, that's fine. But help us find the right path that we can get some actual resolve in this. We're not the only ones complaining. It's all documented. I mean, I guess next door it's social media, but still, it's out there. You guys are aware of it. We filmed it. It's on video. It's been tested. Shops have closed. That's not right. That's not good. You're a real estate agent. That's going to hurt our real estate property values. That's going to, you know, this should not be the next Bay Point. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any other public comment? Welcome.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome.
I'm Fitzgerald. Some of you know me. Kevin and Michael. You also probably know I have a shop over here recently, and I closed it because it just got untenable. Century Management, I would send them videos and photographs, and yeah, it was every day these kids were up there throwing things at my windows. I had customers that were almost hit. One group of customers came in, and there was a tween. He was just doing very obnoxious things right outside the store. They were afraid to leave. And then when they finally left, I went to close my door, and he grabbed it, wouldn't let me. I mean, I was frightened. So going up there every day, I never knew what to expect. It was always, I found it very stressful. And I found that it wasn't worth for me to be putting myself through this toxic atmosphere with these kids. The parents, if you said anything to them, like there was one time they were throwing frisbees at the windows, and I asked them to stop, and then the next thing I also was filming the kids doing it, so I get a parent coming in there yelling at me, calling me a pedophile, you know, because I'm filming the kids, and I just told him to leave the store. He had been drinking, obviously, or at least it seemed obvious to me, they were having a party, and I called the sheriff numerous times. There was was even a sign posted that says it's a penal code. I forget the number, and that you can be cited. The sheriffs basically wouldn't cite them or do anything. Sometimes by the time the sheriff did get up there, the kids would disappear. They knew I was calling the sheriff. So it just got to be, I didn't even want to go up there anymore, so I just packed up and left, and I've been doing other antique fairs and things like that. But I met Linda via her, I guess she had posted on Nextdoor about a year and a half ago about the situation that she got caught in. And somehow we got on the phone together, and she was terribly upset. She was crying. Her husband was out of town. I mean, the woman was very frightened. And I talked to her for, you know, about an hour, and that's how we initially met. And they reached out to me recently about what's been going on, because it has been escalating. And not only here in Discovery Bay, but I'm sure some of you have seen things on Nextdoor about over in Brentwood, kids are in the lakeshore, kids are kicking in doors and just doing things that, you know, they're not things that kids should be doing. I mean, I remember ringing doorbells as a kid, but it was like a once in a while thing, you know, or wrapping somebody's house in toilet paper, you know, but that was, you know, now it's escalated where these kids are kicking doors and terrorizing people. I mean, I call them little terrorists, you know, but it seems like there's something that needs to be brought out in the community. You know, the parents need to be held accountable. They enable these kids. They're like, they're little angels. They can do no wrong. But there must be some way to address this, probably maybe the sheriff or something, so that it doesn't fall in a black hole and get worse. Businesses are very important to a community, especially a small community like this. You want businesses to thrive and to grow, because it's more tax-based. You know, you can get out of becoming just a town and turn into a little city if you have enough businesses paying the, you know, the taxes and this type of thing. So it behooves the community to address this problem. And thank you for listening.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment regarding this? Welcome.
Thank you. My first time here. My name is Jim Rosenbaum. I've lived here since 1990. And like Linda Lambert said, this community is changing. And like she also said, not always for the better. The things that I've seen the last year and a half, 2 years, with the kids in the street with the non-street bikes, they have no lights on, they ride at night. So literally just driving over here tonight, coming down Newport, I almost hit two kids, total black clothes. They were right in the middle of my lane. I drive a Prius, so it's a little bit quiet, and scared the heck out of one guy, kind of went off on a curb. And here's what I see happening now that the word is getting out into the community. People are becoming aware of these situations. As we all know with kids, a lot of times if you don't nip things in the bud, they tend to grow. You know, we have problems with people going to Safeway, stealing food, just going out the door and things like that. But here's what I see happening. At some point, there's going to be an accident. A kid's going to get hurt. A kid's going to get killed. And then it's going to be in public media. And then all the talk and all the awareness that's being made now is going to become public. And then people are going to say, why didn't we do something about it before this happened? So I'm just here to say, warning, something's going to happen. I mean, I feel bad. I love the kids. I have no hard feelings for them or anything like that. But obviously their parents are not, you know, keeping an eye on them as much as they should. And I hate to see anybody get hurt or killed.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment? Welcome.
Hi. My name is Royce Hancock. I've been out here since 1986, and I've seen Discovery Bay change over the years. I would like to relay one of the experiences I had at Cornell Park. I used to coach baseball there, and I see kids come by on their motorcycles and riding around, and I can't stand that. See them tear up the field. So I chase them off. One kid kid came back. So I chased him off again, and he takes off, and I thought, well, I'm gonna go home. And I had to follow this kid. He drove right by a cop and kept going by Marina, so he was somewhere on the other side. And I stopped and talked to the cop, and I asked him, did you see the guy go by? He said, oh yeah, yeah. I said, well, he was tearing up the field back there. And he said, well, I'll go talk to him. So he obviously knew where this kid was. So it's happening a lot now. And the kids are more and more brazen. It starts with the parents. So I don't know if there's something the police can do to stop this. I don't know if you all have any kids, but my kid's grown up, but we never did anything like that. Really, that's all I gotta say.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment? Is there anybody online?
There are no hands raised.
Okay, I think Dina, you had something to address with that.
Yeah, so I spoke to Mr. and Mrs. Lambert this afternoon, and so we had a good conversation about what was going on. After that conversation, I reached out to the lieutenant and to the supervisor's office, let them know about the situation and how people are upset here. And I asked them if they could join tonight. It was a little short notice, so they could not. But then I asked them if they would do a community meeting here at this community center for the public to come and voice their concerns and have conversations. They both agreed to that. I have not set any dates yet, but I will work at getting a date and open up this space so that they can do that. And then I will let you all know when that date is happening. So that, actually, I'll let you know if you can pass the word around. That would be great when that's going to happen. So.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. Yeah, thank you. Okay, so if there's no other public comment, we're going to go ahead and move on to the consent calendar. Are there any questions or changes to the consent calendar?
Move to accept.
Second.
Okay, I'm going to open it up to public comment. Is there any public comment on the consent calendar?
No hands raised.
Okay, we'll bring it back to the board for a roll call vote, please.
Director Porter?
Aye.
Director Buteau?
Aye.
Director Graves?
Aye.
Aye.
Wonderful. I'm going to pass this on to you, my friend. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. All right. So don't you have to pass it after item number 3?
No.
Oh.
I don't.
Good try, okay. That
it is officially yours.
Yeah. That's right. Consent calendar.
You're going to be
Dang
amazing.
It. All right.
That consent calendar elected
I know. I
you
saw
as
you.
The
I
board
saw
president.
You. Okay. So moving on to item D1, we'd like to recognize Director Porter for her service as president of the board last year, 2023. And we have this lovely
thank you.
Plaque. So, Ashley, thank you so much for your service. We appreciate you taking the role of president, and you did a wonderful job. So
thank you
very much.
Thank you.
There you go. Give it 1 second for everyone to shuffle, and then we'll pick back up.
I guess we just taking a break?
I guess so. I wanted to take it off the box for you.
Thanks,
yes.
That's awesome.
No, that's appreciated. And while everybody's making it back away to their seats, we have a Viola presentation. You want to come on up and get ready to give the presentation to you too?
Oh. Yep. Which one?
I'll go Anthony.
Yeah.
Rock, paper, scissors.
Yes.
Yeah.
For the Viola presentation.
Sure.
Yeah. Welcome.
Y'all. Good evening, board. It is 2024.
Crazy.
Because we got a long night and another guest speaker behind me, I'll try to make this short and sweet, but I do want to make sure that water and wastewater is doing its justice for you guys. So if you have any questions, let me know. But for the most We had our safety topics. We focused on lockout, tagout, revising our SBCC, and of course, winter weather conditions. We've been getting a lot of rain lately and pretty steady, so actually getting cold out there, so that's different. On the next slide, we are at a couple of differences this month. Well, two, well, six, well, four are active. Well, five is no longer active and cannot be used as an emergency. We feel like we severed a connection between the pump itself and the shaft, or the shaft is bent. We've been keeping on a test phase just in case something happened. While well seven is down, we had to bring it online in emergency. Its status, it was that it was in standby mode until well eight comes online. So that is still the case. And well seven, I just got an email today that they should be receiving the new cable for, or the approved cable for well seven, hopefully by the end of this week or Monday. And they're gonna try to get a schedule to put well seven back in the ground by the end of next week. So on the next slide, our chemicals are pretty stable throughout December. Both plants run pretty close together. Well, four is still hanging in there holding Newport. And the chemical usage is generally a little higher, but we have been running more of well six out of Willow, which causes that. So, on the next slide, we've got our graphs, which pretty much show the difference in our numbers there, our trends. So December dropped off pretty good for Willow's production, as it generally does. And then on the next page for Newport, Newport's a little bit more stable, but again, similar to last year. On the next slide, we did have one water quality complaint. It was an odor, and it was one of the residents pretty close to the Willow plant. While well six is running, it does have a tendency to pull up hydrogen sulfide. So so that's the odor, but we fixed it with flushing the hydrant, so pretty simple. On the next slide, wastewater. All 15 lift stations are active, no issues to report with them, and we're still running off of the new lift station Y in place of infront pump station while they install the new bar screen. On the next slide, we've got our average flow. We closed out the December at 36 million gallons for the month, and this time last year we were at 35 million, so not too bad. On the next slide, we've got our total flows, which is pretty much the same thing, and our average flow, pretty consistent with our history there. Conductivity. Due to well 7 being down, or largely due to well 7 being down as of May, our number was, our actual calendar average dropped below the 2400 limit, and December's number itself was less than 1900. So we will not have to pay any minor penalties or anything like that. So on the next slide, all of our filtration rates are pretty good, 99% filtration rate. Our actual number for the year, which goes to the state, is 2106, and our limit is 2400 for conductivity. And our nitrates are hanging in there between 5 and 6. And our new permit limit, once we go into the new permit, will be 10. So we're doing pretty good so far with the new plan. On the next slide, zero SSOs and zero customer complaints about wastewater. Just a FYI, we are completely done with SO ratting the golf course. We've gotten all of the Willow side to Willow Lake Drive, and we are starting to work ourselves back towards Clipper, and then we'll turn and go back up towards Newport. So here in the next couple of weeks, I'll probably send notice out to everybody, because we will have to hit the main manholes all the way down Discovery Bay Boulevard, and most of them are in the center of that lane. So we're gonna have to be careful and do that. It's pretty quick, but we do have to hit every manhole or two manholes at a time as we do that. So we'll try to let everybody know, try to be aware, be as cautious as we can. So other than that, that's all we got.
Thank you.
That's good.
Just a couple comments, if I may, Anthony. First of all, congratulations on getting our denitrification up on schedule by December 31st, I believe. We heard that in the Water Wastewater Committee meeting today, that
it's, you're fully operative as a denitrification, we are fully operative as a denitrification plant. So well invested, how many, $14 million, $15 million?
More than that.
And then I will be interested to see what happens in the next quarter with regards to conductivity once the core gets back into seven. It'll be interesting to see what, how that ends up.
I have a feeling it's going to be a rude awakening if we know that's coming.
Well, so. Hope not. But anyway, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so next item up, E1, we have discussion.
Do we have another presentation? Oh, I'm sorry, my bad.
I'll go ahead and run this one.
I know. That's what I get for opening my mouth.
Discussion and possible action to authorize general manager to execute the Viola Memorandum Agreement.
Okay, I'm taking cues over here.
Yeah.
So this is John Burnett, he's from Veolia, and he did provide a presentation for the Water and Wastewater Committee last year, and so now we're bringing that forward to the Board of Directors. We do have a new presentation that he just revised a little bit today, so that will be on the screens, and we will add it as additional materials to the website tomorrow, okay? So, all right, take it away, John.
All right, are we gonna be pulling that freezer up, or, oh, there we go. Thank you. All right, next slide, please. All right, my name is John Burdett, and I'm a Senior Business Development Manager with Veolia Sustainable Industries and Buildings Group. And today we're going to propose a program that's approved by Pacific Gas and Electric, the Department of General Services, State of California, and the U.S. Department of Energy. Next slide, please. So there's a lot of challenges out there right now. You know, there's the utility grid reliability. How do we keep our infrastructure resilient in the event of a power outage? High energy costs, and I'll show you another slide on how PG&E has escalated almost 2 to 3 times standard inflation over the last 40 years. I think right now we're starting to feel some of the effects of climate change, which these renewable energy projects and energy conservation programs can help reduce. And then obviously we're growing here, right? So we spend a lot of money on electricity. Next slide, please. So here in PG&E, it's the highest, most expensive utility in the United States outside of Hawaii and Alaska. So over the last 40 years, and I've provided the website here, on average, electricity has gone up over 11% a year over the last 40 years. And it's like the stock market. It goes up and down and flat some years, and then there's a big spike. But on average, it's been over 11.32%, and last year was 10.26%. And they just announced another 20% increase recently to harden the lines so they stop sparking wildfires, and to upgrade the utility for the millions of electric vehicles that they plan on hooking up by 2030. So there's a law of supply and demand, right? Right now, we're already struggling with rolling brownouts and grid capacity. So I, you know, to bring on millions of cars on top of that is going to peak demand. And some folks are saying that the electricity price could triple by 2030. Next slide, please. So the California Public Utility Commission, believe it or not, has made it even more difficult to implement solar. And there was this program called Net Energy Metering, which basically, you know, if we overproduce in the summer and put electricity on the grid, we would generate bill credits. And in the beginning, they would give you a one-to-one ratio on those bill credits. If you were spending 30 cents a kilowatt hour and you supplied the grid with energy, they would give you a credit of 30 cents. Then they came out with Net Energy Metering 2.0, which reduced that benefit. Now they're implementing what's called Net Energy Metering 3.0, which is going to reduce that benefit by another 75%. So basically, the utility is complaining that they're paying electricity for people who are implementing solar when they should be paying wholesale rates. And they're claiming that it's raising the cost for everybody because solar owners do not maintain the grid or pay their fair share of grid maintenance. Next slide, please. So in February, the CPUC will no longer take applications for what's called net energy metering dash A, aggregation for the 2.0. So our first proposal is to enter into a memorandum of agreement so we can finalize the designs and get your applications in that will grandfather the district onto this more lucrative net energy metering program. So that's the critical success factor. And then you'll be grandfathered in for the next 20 years. Next slide, please. So we have done some work technically at risk. We've walked all the sites with Anthony and Aaron here, and we've taken pictures of all of the electrical switchgear, and we have concept designs in place right now. So we've done a preliminary analysis, and the savings here is off the charts if we're able to implement this program. We just did a similar program for the city of Arlington, where we also operate and maintain their wastewater treatment plant, and it's about half the size of yours, on top of some of the other things that we can also power. And we're gonna save them $39 million over the life of the solar system. So, I mean, if things are linear here, we should be able to do that and more. After, you know, if we get your approval today, we'll finalize the program with hard costs, guaranteed energy savings, and bring you back a final contract agreement to implement the program. Next slide, please. Now, on top of the solar, we're also going to be looking for other energy conservation measures. We've noticed quite a bit of lighting within the district that could be changed, from the old style metal halides to the LEDs, the more efficient LEDs. There may be some HVAC or some pump equipment that we could take a look at. But at the heart of the program is solar renewable energy generation coupled with battery storage. And one of the programs for this particular site would be to put solar and battery storage here. So this could become an emergency center for the community in the event of a natural disaster or a power outage. And it's required that if you're going to designate this facility as an emergency facility, that it has the capability to run if the utility grid is down. Now, we can get some great grants and rebates and incentives to help pay for that as well. Dean and I took a look at one just recently, and it was heavily geared towards disadvantaged communities, which the town of Discovery Bay Community Service District does not fall within that category. But there are some other ones. In February, there's one called the DEBA program, and that's called the Distributed Electricity Backup Asset Program. And we're definitely gonna try to make a play for that. Next slide, please. So when we sat down to talk about some of the goals, resiliency really came to the top of the list, as well as long-term utility cost savings. But I won't go through this whole list, but you can see all of the great benefits that an energy conservation and a renewable energy generation program could have for this community. Next slide, please. So in order for us to offer these types of programs, we have to guarantee to the district that we are going to be budget neutral or better over the life of the program. So what that means is we're targeting operating costs that are already in your budget, such as the PG&E budget. And we want to redirect those funds into these investments that will reduce those operating costs or those utility bills. And we can finance it with grants, rebates, and incentives. There's also subsidized financing programs through the California Energy Commission that offers a 1% loan program in today's interest rate environment that is extremely attractive. And then after the debt service is paid for, you enjoy all of the cash flow savings from generating your own renewable power. Next, please. So here's what we did for ARVA. If PG&E continues on their 10% plus clip of raising rates on an annual basis, you can see that exponentially raises the cost of electricity over time. But if we're able to provide renewable energy generating systems that we borrow money from and or get paid for rebates and grants, like a fixed mortgage payment will be fixing the cost of your power, and that's represented by the orange section under the graph. The blue is everything that they're gonna save. And then you can see there's a little spike right around year 20 where we have to replace some equipment that are, it's called inverters, that change the direct current to alternating current so we can use it in our buildings.
It's a dual, like a dual access type of thing, so it takes it and gives it as well?
Right, so what it does is it has a meter on here, a PG&E meter that allows flow back and forth. So typically we overgenerate in the summer when we have long days and a lot of sunshine. And then we use the bill credits that we generated at night and in our winter months when we have short days and we don't generate as much. But the goal is to zero your energy usage on an annual basis. So we have very sophisticated models that take into account latitude, longitude, weather data, soiling factors, so we can ensure and guarantee the performance of these systems. And in this case, they're looking at 1,000% ROI, or 10x on their investment. And they didn't have to come out of pocket with any capital funding. It's all funded through grants and or the subsidized loan programs through the California Energy Commission. Next. Now everybody goes, well, what if it doesn't save the same clip? Right, 5%. You can see that they would only save $13 million, but it's still a 377% return on investment. So this would be a very conservative case here. Maybe there's a new invention 20 years from now, Back to the Future, we put the banana peels in and power's cheap. But when you have an investor-owned utility, I don't think they'll bring it to us because they need to make money, right? They're for profit. Next. So the funding solutions that we've identified right now are the DEBA grant, and then there's also one called the Energy Efficiency Conservation Block Grant that we could make a play for. And then there's a guaranteed one that was just passed with the Inflation Reduction Act. If we go to the next slide, please. So the Inflation Reduction Act put $749 billion of funding into these types of programs. And it's going to authorize us to get a 30% grant from the federal government. And in lieu of a tax credit, which homeowners can get or a private entity can get, they changed it this year so municipalities or special districts can receive a cash payment from the US Treasury in lieu of that tax credit. So that's huge. So right off the bat, you're gonna get a 30% return on your investment as soon as we file the grant paperwork. And then if we can leverage that with a couple of these others that are competitive, and if we can get one of those, I mean, we could potentially have a project that outperforms the city of Arvin at 10x. Next slide, please. So as part of our guarantee, we're gonna offer a data acquisition system, a monitoring system. So these measures or suggested measures that we want you to implement, we'll be able to measure and verify exactly with a revenue grade meter how much energy they generate, and if it's below what we stated, our performance guarantee will make up the difference. So if we tell you you're going to save $100,000 a year or $500,000 a year and we come in short, we write a check for the difference. We're very conservative and we don't do that often. However, it backstops your risk as board members, because there's no incentive to So we backstop that risk for you with our performance guarantee. And then this upgrade system can also include all kinds of other things at the wastewater plant, the community center, whatever data you have that you want to share with the public, or you want to see internally behind closed doors, we can make a dashboard for it. So any of the wastewater treatment facility, KPIs or chemical spends or usage, we can all integrate that into this same dashboard. Next slide. Some of the recent wins that we've had are local here. The city of Oakland, the city of Arbor, we mentioned. We're doing a big one right now for the city of Burlingame, which also includes a digester. I don't know if you guys have heard of those. your facility is a little small, or kind of right on the fence for a digester, but maybe when that new community goes in, you might come up there. But we can take a lot of the sludge that you pay to haul off and digest it in a big tank that makes methane gas or a renewable biofuel, and run a generator from that as well.
Are they going to allow those generators with the new CARB regulations?
Yeah. Well, we have an existing one in Burlingame. It's just too small now.
Yeah.
And it's at the end of the useful life, so we're going to upgrade it, as well as the digester, and then put in a megawatt of solar, and then they'll have a zero net energy facility. They'll be able to create all the electricity to run that facility, regardless of PG&E. Next slide, please. So here, the community cell center and the Willow Water Treatment Facility are congruent and adjacent. So we can power the water treatment facility by putting the solar out in the parking lot here. So you could have the solar parking lot shade structures out here that would provide shaded parking in the heat of the summer. We could also upgrade the system a little bit and put in some EV chargers if that's of interest to you. The Community Services District could generate some revenue if people want to charge their car here in the parking lot. And it's becoming quite the fiasco. I don't know if you've seen the news lately, but
yeah.
In Chicago, man, with the blizzard, they're all stacked up and the cars are going dead. And, there's more cars out there than charging stations right now. So I think it's a big
come home and have your neighbor charge it on your charger.
I saw a guy pull out a gas engine of his, in the truck of his Tesla, and a gas generator
to on the
side of the road. I was like, doesn't that defeat the purpose? But we can tie these two facilities and supply them both with renewable energy because they are adjacent, and obviously provide some shaded parking and some other things too. We're going to look at some other energy conservation measures as well. Next slide. The Newport Water Treatment Facility is kind of tight for solar, so I don't think we're going to be able to fit much there, if any, but it could use a battery energy storage system, which would take out all of the demand charges and provide some resiliency at that site before you have to turn on the generator as well. Next slide. Wastewater Treatment Plant 1 still has a lot of energy usage because of the pumping there, and I think we've identified an area north there where there's some old ponds that we could put some solar to cover that load. Next.
We got a couple old ponds up there.
Yeah, I see that. Here at Wastewater Treatment Plant 2, this is by far your largest energy-consuming facility. It costs over $500,000 a year to operate this from an electricity perspective alone. You can see there's a lot of land there at the south side that I think we can fit enough solar panels in there to zero out the consumption. We would also like to put some batteries here to help with demand management and what's called energy arbitrage. And we might be able to get grant funding for that as well, the backup battery system. Next slide. And then only with Veolia can you achieve all of these great things. So we'll get you grandfathered in on the net energy metering program. We'll help you leverage those tax incentives and get those cash payments from the government. We'll be able to upgrade some of the old inefficient equipment that you have out here in all of the facilities. and the list goes on. I even got another slide here with what we're gonna do there. Next, please. Right, so we guarantee the performance, so there's no financial or technical risk to the district. The responsibility lies on us. There's no engineer that I'm gonna point the finger to or our contractor. Dina likes this one, there's only one throat to choke, that would be Veolia's. And we do all the measurement and verification, providing the reports. And then we have third-party oversight as well with the California Energy Commission, because we're gonna utilize their loan program. And they have engineers on staff to review all of our work to make sure we're not overstating our savings. And then we have to do reporting to them for 10 years. Once we install the system, we'll have to report back and let them know how it's functioning. Next. So as we mentioned, we came back out here last August. We presented to the Water and Wastewater Committee. We did a lot of utility data collection, and Dina and the crew there a lesson on how to download what's called 15-minute interval data. So we're using your data from PG&E in 15-minute snapshots, so we know exactly when during the day you're using the power and what it costs. We've done a preliminary analysis to qualify the district, and you guys are gonna save more than our rent for sure. So there's a wonderful savings opportunity here. And right now we're asking for the approval of that memorandum of agreement to move forward with the final design and development. And I'd like to mention that it's a shared risk. So if for whatever reason I can't get you that 30% investment tax credit, or if I can't get you the net energy metering interconnection applications, then there's no charge. The only time you would be charged for that memorandum of agreement is if we did all the work, we developed a program that saved you a lot of money, and then for whatever reason, we decided to back out.
Yeah.
If we move forward with the program, that the dollar amount of the $55,050, I believe it was, just rolls right into the final program. Now there is a critical time, and February 9th is when those applications are due. So I have a team of engineers on standby and scheduled that are dedicated to the town of Discovery Bay, assuming we get the MOA approved tonight. Next slide, please. Any questions?
No, that's just me.
Yeah, a few.
Sure.
So, John, first time I've met you tonight, I heard your presentation, so I'm just trying to understand. You went over a lot of details.
Sure.
So, first of all, maybe you could explain what the sustainability industry, sustainable industries and buildings division. So, is that just another division of Veolia? What exactly does that group do? What is your group do?
That's exactly it. Yeah. So, the Sustainable Industries and Buildings Group is our Energy Services Division. So Veolia is an environmental company that has three main pillars. Water and wastewater is a main pillar, and how can we reuse, recycle, and be better stewards of water on our planet. We have the energy, which we're moving to decarbonization and electrification in our energy management or energy solutions SID division. And then we have our Environmental Services Division, which handles hazardous wastes. Veolia is going into solar panel recycling, so we can recycle these panels in an environmentally appropriate way.
Are you guys manufacturing panels?
We do not, no.
So mostly, are they basically that is an engineering group trying to help us put together a package that makes sense for us? I mean,
well, the term technically is an energy services company,
okay,
or an ESCO. So we do complete turnkey programs from development to design to implementation to guarantee performance and long-term O&M.
So that's one half of the proposal. The other half, though, is you're going to go out on our behalf and try to secure these grandfathered deals with PG&E and some other things. That's another aspect of what you're proposing.
Correct. Correct. We typically help with the financial solution, mm-hmm. and then we guarantee the return on investments.
We didn't talk about this years ago.
It's new technology, and it wasn't cost effective. We have tried to talk about it for years, but it's just become... Yeah. I mean, you and I have been talking about it for 12 years.
I think it's good timing. There's some stuff that's... some bills that are coming out for mm-hmm. the PG&E for the electrification stuff. I mean, we're not just talking cars. We're talking heavy duty stuff, fleets. And, you know, that starts to happen in 2025. Up till now, PG&E has not really been able to update infrastructure for that unless it was initiated by customers or businesses. The bill that's currently being worked on is going to state that they're going to be able to upgrade no matter what, which means that our rates are going to escalate quite a bit.
Guess who pays for that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, so.
And they're going to have to because the grid can't handle what's about ready to hit that's being demanded by CARB and our California governments.
That's right. And, but on the flip side, I've never seen this many grants, incentives, hmm. and
yeah.
special financing available wonderful. For these types of programs.
That's what's helped made it mm-hmm. make it cost. A question on that 1% loan.
Yes, sir.
Grant, what's the term on that?
Okay, so the term for K-12 school districts is 20 years. However, for municipalities and special districts, they only give you 17 years.
17? 17. 1-7. That's not bad. Topic for a second. Are you guys still in transportation? You guys used to do some transportation stuff too. I remember seeing buses in Phoenix and say Veolia on them. Are you still doing transportation?
I'm sure we do. We're such
oh,
a huge company. That
okay. Just curious.
That
blew my mind
do.
When I first saw that. But
if it makes sense, we'll do it.
And all the cities and counties that you mentioned, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
So are those also Veolia run facilities as well, or maybe, or not necessarily?
Not all of them. The city of Arvin, in that example, we do run that plant. But we're doing one for the Placer County Water Agency, which is up near Auburn, California, and mm-hmm. we do not run their facilities. They're a special district like yourselves. I've done, it sounds funny, it's Veolia Services District, Community mm-hmm. Services, not Veolia. Someone asked me the other day, do you have a Veolia Community Services District? And I was like, no, it's Veolia. So we've done that. Malaga is putting in solar under this under a similar program. So not all of them, to answer your question. And we also do cities and counties, all of the facilities, not just the water facilities.
Are most of these municipalities doing this because of all the grants that are available, or?
Yeah, and a lot of them, they, you know, they don't have the staff to run all these things to ground, so when a program developer comes in like us, you know, they jump on it because they've got so many other things to deal with. They'd rather us put it together and guarantee it and make sure that it works properly.
I think part of also the issue that we've run into in the past is the fact that there's nothing, we have facilities that are spread out from each other. But I could see, I think you addressed most of that in that each facility will be standalone production. It's not going to be tied into a grid that's going to cover the entire
no.
district.
That
correct?
That would be, they're ending that program too, and it's called virtual net metering. However, that's not as lucrative because let's say we had, you know, 100 acres out in the field somewhere.
Which we do.
Which you do. PG&E. Is still going to charge us for the transmission and distribution.
That was why it wasn't cost effective in the past because our needs are spread out over a large geographical
right.
area with no central tie-in. All that infrastructure would have to be put in place, and we'd probably have to use PG&E for that infrastructure.
You would.
Yeah.
So we call these behind-the-meter installations, to whereas we don't need PG&E to transmit and distribute the power. We're using it on site, and by eliminating the transmission and distribution, we get almost full retail value of that electricity by producing it on site. Now here at the community center, there's a loophole in the rule. Because the property is congruent and adjacent to the Willows Water Treatment Facility, then I can pump in all of the electricity into this meter here and then generate a bill credit for that site, or vice versa. So we are able to do this facility because the properties are congruent.
Which is pretty cool.
And that's
yes,
what allows
really
you to do the charging and stuff like that, correct?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And there's huge grants for that as well.
There are. Yeah.
Tons.
In fact, some of the chargers they're giving away for free.
Yeah, they
all
are.
You have to do is install them.
So Energize is huge, but that's starting to get I'm going off on
this. It's high in demand. Very high.
I'm living this world a lot right now.
I'm sorry, Mike, I'm a little slow, but
no.
So I don't quite understand the whole PG&E cost and buyback, and can you maybe do a simple analogy for me so I can.
Sure.
Is this what you refer to?
Yeah, so the meter, basically, when you use electricity,
mm-hmm.
will run forward. And in the summer, when we have a lot of sunshine, we actually produce more electricity than we need. So we'll run the meter backwards. And when we run the meter backwards, we're generating a credit for your bill. So the idea is to size these systems in such a way that we generate enough extra electricity to generate credits, so at night, if we're using electricity, we're using the credits that we generated during the day. And even on a seasonal basis, if we overproduce in the summer, then we're using those credits for the winter. So we're trying to zero out your energy bill with these.
But then you mentioned, though, since we have different areas, we're sending that energy to another area?
Yeah.
That was the last part.
We can't do that.
Can't do that.
Except
because we're not allowed to transmit electricity. Yeah. We can just use what we produce.
And then you put that into the battery storage, correct?
Right.
Yeah. They weren't really even sending. They were just tying your
meters
together.
You tie it into the more efficient batteries that are being produced now, so you can store it for future use.
And then it makes it an emergency center because we have battery storage. So if something goes down, we take that battery storage and put it into our system to run our system. So we can not be without.
That's called a microgrid?
Yeah, microgrid.
So
Taylor Farms says it. It's actually very cool.
A lot of people think when they get solar, that if the utility goes down, they get to stay online because they have solar.
Yeah.
But unless you have the batteries, which is called a microgrid controller, you can't do that. Because if you have power generating on a solar array, the utility grid goes down and they send out a serviceman to work on it, you can't have electricity going in on that grid or they'll get shocked. So typically the solar goes down with the grid, and that's called grid parallel. However, if you have the microgrid system, it will disconnect from the grid at your main electrical switchgear. And then you can keep that online because now you're not threatening.
It's like bypassed,
right,
to the microgrid.
Exactly, and then the batteries act like a buffer.
Yeah.
Because you may not be producing as much or too much power during the day if you don't need it, so then you can either store it in the battery or use it.
And so, correct me if I'm wrong, but whatever we're putting into the battery storage is like a flat, and then that way, if we're giving anything back to the grid, we're able to save some of that reimbursement because they're reimbursing it at a much lower rate going back.
Bingo.
So it's good because we keep it in the battery storage, keep it for ourselves,
exactly.
Versus sending it back at a much lower rate.
Exactly.
Okay.
Because that lower rate, depending on the time of day, could be 3 to 5 cents. Well, at 3 to 5 cents, we'll just store it in our battery because then we'll let the battery loose when it's 40 cents. Right?
Yeah.
We'll offset it at
mm-hmm.
the peak
right.
of time.
Mm-hmm.
So, if I understand this correctly, what you're looking for tonight is about $50,000 approval from us for you guys to move forward, get the permits we need to be grandfathered in, and to move together with staff to and our general manager to be able to move forward with that product. As long as it reaps what you want it to reap or what we want it to reap, that $50,000 gets carried into the project cost.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't, if you're not successful, we don't pay the $50,000.
That's correct.
Okay, just to sum it up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Any other questions from the board?
Obviously, water waste, where you guys met and discussed.
Oh, no, I mean, yeah, this is something we've been hoping for a while, yeah.
I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Do we have any public online that has any hands raised?
There are no hands raised.
Anyone in the audience?
I just have a teeny question. You talked about solar panels out here in the parking lot. You know, we're built on peat. And so there was an issue a long time ago. The yacht club and the marina were also thinking about doing solar in the parking lot. And they couldn't go deep enough for the infrastructure that's needed for the panels. I just wanted to kind of bring that up, and I think Frank Morgan, one of our neighbors, he was really, really involved in that, so they're doing something else over there now.
Okay.
But just to remind, and maybe all of you are even more aware of the problem with trying to dig into peat, you just keep going.
It also,
Kevin,
that area was a lot of landfill because they dredged over there, and that parking lot in the marina area might have a different type of structure, but I'm sure that they will cover that. But they're going to be putting those solar panels out on the boathouses now.
On the garages. Yeah.
Boathouses, yeah.
A, B, C, D.
Right, right, exactly.
Yeah.
But then that'll be part of your engineering. And
it will, yeah. We'll do a complete geotech study.
Right.
And that will depend on how deep or what kind of spread it was.
Correct.
How wide?
Correct.
Yeah.
Good point,
though.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I noticed you have a geotech coming out here for a wall in the
vortex. Well, actually, we were probably thinking about putting some solar panels back there,
yeah.
So maybe
strike that,
incorporate
strike
that.
That's not going to be discussed tonight. We're going to move on to something different, I think.
Okay. So, any other public comment? All right. I will bring it back to the board for a motion.
I move to accept staff's recommendation.
I second.
Can I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Porter?
Aye.
Director Gatto?
Aye.
Director Graves?
Aye.
Vice President Graham?
Aye.
President Callahan?
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Thank you.
Item number two was removed from the meeting this evening, so we'll move to item three. Discussion and possible action to authorize General Manager to execute contract and temporary entry permit for the installation and monitoring of well in the Cecchini Ranch project.
You did good.
Do we have
somebody on the
team? Is Mike Yurok going to give that presentation?
Yes. Oh, sorry. Yes, he is.
Okay, thank you. Hi, Mike.
You are not audible. But we will in a second.
Give us
a minute. Talk.
Okay, how about that?
We've got
there you.
Go.
Okay, great. Hi, good evening.
Welcome.
So, as you know, we have the Cecchini Ranch project, and they are in the preliminary stages of figuring out all the different planning aspects of their project. And one of those most important aspects is the quantity and quality of the water that might be available out there in that general area for their subdivision. And we're looking at about 2,200 housing units and other industrial, commercial land uses out there. So in order to answer that question, we need to drill a monitoring well and draw some water samples from the various aquifers that we come across in that general area and analyze the water to make sure it meets drinking water standards and also make a determination as to the quantity of water that we can draw from the aquifer in that area. And so before you tonight are two documents. One is the agreement with Rudolph and Scalini, which is to actually install the monitoring wells and draw the water samples and run the analysis at the lab and report the results of what they find. And those costs will be covered by the developer, which is part and part of the second agreement, which is a right of entry agreement, which provides the town the permission to go onto their property to have Rudolph and Scalini install the monitoring well. And pardon me, it's going to take a water real quick. Install the monitoring well. And as I mentioned, they're going to be paying all the costs for this work. And we will be receiving the money up front before the work starts. And it should take about, once the agreement is signed, approving, we have board approval tonight, and we receive the funding from the developer. It should take about 4 months to get all these answers from So, that's my presentation.
Any questions from the board?
Mm-hmm. No, I just make a comment that we reviewed that at the Wastewater Committee meeting today and asked what we thought were pertinent questions and had them all satisfactory answered.
Okay.
It sounds like there's very little risk to the town since the developer is paying for this. And
And they're putting the money in up front too, so.
That's good.
Good. Any public on the line that has any comment?
There are no hands raised.
Okay, I think we are absent of public in the building, so we will move to entertain a motion.
Actually, I just had two quick questions, and Brian, you may know the information on this. Is there a name to the development yet, or are we still just calling it the Chiquini property?
As far as I know, that's the name.
And no website yet or anything? Okay, just wondering.
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Can I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Porter?
Aye.
Director Gatto?
Aye.
Director Gray?
Aye.
Vice President Graham?
Aye.
President Callahan?
Aye, motion carries.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Any manager report today?
Not tonight.
General manager?
Not tonight, thank you.
Okay, I see we have a filed director's report, no correspondence, legal. Any future agenda items?
We do have a committee report.
We do.
Water, wastewater did meet today. You guys met today, didn't you?
We did.
Yeah, so anyway, water, we'll go first. Water, wastewater committee meeting that met today, and you've heard most of what we discussed. The only thing else that was on the agenda that will be coming before the board, hopefully within the next 6 weeks, is some more discussion with regards to the new building and pricing and quotes that we've gotten, so that the board can start to discuss that and make a decision on how we're going to move forward for new offices. Hopefully within 6 weeks, we're going to be talking about that, or soon.
Looking forward to it. Thank
yeah.
you. The Parks and Rec met, but we have no reportable items out of that.
I'll just state that for those who did read the report, there is a serious issue on the backside of the community center where the retaining wall has failed, and it's impacting several homes, so we need to address that quickly here.
So in lieu of the doing the soil study, we are looking at finding a specialist to come in and take a look at the retaining wall and develop a plan which may or may not include a soil sample. Good.
Yep.
All right, thank you very much. And with that, we'll adjourn the meeting at 8:07.
Thank you, Michael.